is Four State Focus. News Radio 930 WFMD talks to newsmakers throughout Frederick and surrounding counties.
And welcome into the show. I hope you are well. I'm your host, Ryan Hedrick, and today we're talking to David Brooks. He owns Brooks Behavioral Health Services, and he specializes in helping addicts in the city recover from the disease of addiction. David, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you're well. How are you? Happy New Year, my friend.
Hey, I'm doing wonderful, man. It's just a blessing to be alive.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. The backstory to you starting your own treatment center is really important to tell. First of all, let's establish what the Brooks Center is, who you deal with, and how you help people in the community.
I started Brooks Behavioral Health Services in 2017. I was the director of the jail program, and I just decided to come out into the community to try to stop these behaviors before it got to the point where people were having to go to jail.
And when you started the program, did you envision that it would become what it has become today?
Not in my wildest dreams.
How did you get here?
Where? To, are you talking about to Frederick?
Yeah, to Frederick, because I know you're from Houston, Texas, right?
Yep. So, to be really frank, back when I was living in Houston, my wife caught me getting high one day. Back in like 2005, and she just felt that living in Houston wasn't conducive to our relationship. So she asked if I would move up to the East Coast and start something brand new.
Mm. What type of drugs were you taking?
At that time, I was really involved with PCP at that time.
Mm. What did PCP make you feel like?
Like a king, honestly. I mean, it just felt like that. No, I didn't have any pain, didn't have any thoughts, none of that kind of world. Like it just made me where I was numb to everything, and that was good for me, because going through a painful situation when I was a child, I just didn't like to feel uncomfortable. So it was just more comfortable for me to feel high than it would be for me to feel all of my emotions.
You're listening to the Four State Focus Show, and today we're focusing on recovery from the disease of addiction. We're talking to David Brooks, the owner of Brooks Behavioral Health Services here in the city of Frederick. He has helped countless number of people recover from addiction. He does it every day. He's on the front lines of the battle. We hear the politicalization of fentanyl coming into the United States from the southern border, but I think it runs deeper than that, David. When it gets down to it, why did you start using drugs?
I mean, I started using drugs just because, I mean, trauma, you know, being molested, you know, by a babysitter for 4 years at the age of 9, it was hard for me to even see the world and see the world around me, to be honest. And so I just chose to escape all of my emotions and feelings through using a substance.
Yeah. I have referred to addiction as a disease multiple times in this interview, because it is my belief that addiction is a disease. It's much like cancer. It's progressive, incurable. It can be fatal if you don't treat it. Do you subscribe to the same theory? Do you tell your counselors, do you tell your patients that they have a disease when they are diagnosed as addicts?
Well, that's tricky. So I do believe that it is a disease. I mean, it is in the DSM-4 DSM-5, just like every other disease. But I truly believe that addiction comes from unhealthy belief systems. I think that whenever we start to believe something about ourselves, that we believe the world around us, like for instance, people are like, they believe they have to be perfect. They believe that they have to get everything that they want, or they have to believe that life should be without pain and require no effort. it is a springboard for the basis of addiction. So that's what I'm saying. Do I believe that it is a disease? Yes, once it started. But what starts it is the faulty belief system.
What is the biggest obstacle for people to recover once they start using?
Accountability.
Accountability to who? Themselves or to their peers?
Everything around them. Mm. Everything around them. They have to be accountable for every behavior that they do. They have to be accountable for every thought that they have. And they have to be accountable to all of the pain that they've caused other people.
Can that pain sometimes linger to the point where it's almost impossible to recover? Because if you're responsible for family breakups or the estrangement of your children or felony crimes that have rendered you to prison for a long time or long periods of your life, I mean, can that guilt and shame be overcome with therapy, or does it always linger and it just gets better with time?
I put it to you like this. I've seen really good people die of this disease because they just were not able to confront or deal with some of those things that they've done or have done to them in the past. So yes, there are people who can get out of it, but it takes a lot of work. I would tell people it's like skating up a mountain. If you stop moving your feet, you're going to roll backwards.
David Brooks joining us here on the Four State Focus Show on WFMD and WFRE, and obviously we hear it every day in this community and communities in our listening area that opioids are raging out of control. In your opinion, where are we at with this epidemic of opioid use in our community? Is it getting better? I mean, we're not hearing about it as much as we were, say, 4 or 5 years ago, but that doesn't mean the drugs are gone from our community, does it?
What I will say is this, is that I believe, and I call it the opidemic, because it is something that is unique to itself. I've watched every drug come and go, but opioids is one of the only drugs that truly, truly has caused this much devastation, and especially on the East Coast. And just like, let's take crystal meth. Crystal meth has went all the way around the United States. But if you notice that crystal meth really has not penetrated deep in the East Coast, from New Jersey, Maryland to New Jersey, you see a little bit of it. But it's not like any other drug. I mean, like, crystal meth literally stops at the East Coast. Like, it stops at, like, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. And it really doesn't go that much further. It doesn't go into, really, New York. You can't find it. But the opiates, such heroin, fentanyl, has been such a devastating drug that it is overpowering every city on this East Coast.
Hmm.
It's just different than anywhere else in the United States. Don't get me wrong, it's there, but it's not as plentiful as it is out here. And I don't know if it's a political thing or something, but something is keeping it such a major issue in these areas.
Is there one drug that out there that is harder to recover from all the others? I'm talking about physical, the physical and mental withdrawal from the drug. Is it heroin? Is it crystal meth? Is it cocaine? Or are they equally as bad or hard or difficult to recover from?
If I had to put one of the hardest drugs to recover from, it's probably alcohol.
Wow.
And I know a lot of people might not say that because everybody's looking at all of the other issues. But you got to see this. In order to buy cocaine, crack, you know, PCP, heroin, you have to go into predominantly rough areas, but alcohol is at, you know, bar mitzvahs, it's at, you know, christenings. I mean, it's at every party, birthday parties. And so when people really struggle with alcohol, the triggers are so, it's everywhere you look. And so I've noticed that alcohol is coming back as probably one of the worst problem that we see in treatment. Like, don't get me wrong, opiates, you die immediately, but the devastation of what alcohol does to someone independent, they normally lose everything by the time that they get to the point where they see that they need some type of recovery.
I talked about the politicalization of the fentanyl coming into the United States from the southern border. We heard about a lot of drug overdoses during the pandemic. From a treatment perspective, from a professional, somebody on the front lines perspective, was that narrative blown out of proportion? Or is that really true? We are losing more addicts than at any other time. Were there more overdoses in this city and in this county than any time you can remember during the course of the pandemic at its height?
Man, people were being found in houses by themselves that had been dead for 4, 5, 10 days. People had been isolated. There was no treatment. Really, treatment kind of shut down for a while. AA, NA groups had shut down. And so that's the reason why you saw so many deaths, is because people were isolating. And the worst thing for a drug addict or an alcoholic is to be isolated.
Talk about how people were dealing with that in the aftermath. I mean, people were losing friends and family members they hadn't heard from. What was the trickle-down effect like in the community? What were the families saying during times when we were finding addicts alone who had been dead for days?
Man, it got to the point where there were some people who didn't even really get any, like, obituaries. I mean, it got really silent. Like, people were burying people that, and never really said anything. Like, there was really no closure for a lot of people, and there was really no memorials. There were no nothing. So families were still traumatized by the death of their family members because they didn't have any closure. Because, you know, you remember at the beginning of the pandemic, there just was no real closure. Like, you might only have like 2 or 3 family members that were able to come to the funeral.
David Brooks joining us on Four State Focus, and we're talking about the drug problem in the country, in the county, and the city, and how, and we're going to end with this, how you can recover. If you're struggling, if you know somebody that's struggling, we'll give you the number to get in touch with David Brooks's Behavioral Health Services and get you some help, the help that you need. Is it too late, David, when somebody starts using the heavy drugs? I mean, how long do they have reasonably to check themselves into treatment before they're in real serious trouble?
Man, I will say this, that there is no bad time to start. I think people always say, well, wait till they get to the rock bottom. I've been in this field for over 20 years. I think the terminology is rock bottom is a false narrative, because there's never a rock bottom. When the person thinks that they've hit the rock bottom, I've seen them even go lower. Mm. So it's the best thing to do for a family member or a friend is to just confront them. Confront them in love, not a bunch of why and what questions. Really, how can I help you? Because normally that will kind of cut their defense mechanisms down, and they might be able to tell you more about their problem than going in and go, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Because normally they're going to lie because of the addiction.
What is that conversation like where a family member knows their loved one is using, their loved one is in denial, and the family member really wants treatment, maybe even more than the addict wants treatment? How do you work with family members of people that are so deep in denial that they're not sure they even have a problem?
Well, I normally prescribe to that I won't accept the client into my program until they call me. Whether or not they're 14 years old or 70 years old, I need the person to call me, because a lot of times these family members, they call and set up appointments and the clients never show up because they're just not in agreement. Now, whether or not they called me from being coerced or whether they called me just to kind of make somebody leave them alone, I'm going to take that and I'm going to sit there with them and I'm not going to judge them. I'm just going to say, how can I help? And sometimes they say, oh, I have an anger problem. Well, we'll start there. If we don't have to really go into addiction first, sometimes you have to build that rapport with somebody before you really start talking about their addiction.
And what sorts of problems are grown from addiction? Are there some characteristics that people can look for? If somebody's listening to this and they're like, I know my cousin is using, or I know my brother is using, I just can't prove it. What should they be looking for? What should they be listening for?
Well, first thing they should be looking for is behavior change. They were going to work, they were on time, they were going to school, things were going good, quitting sports, anything like that. It's mostly going to hit in the behavior, because the person can't control their behaviors once they start getting high or drinking. The next thing that you want to look at is attitude change. Are they having different attitudes? Are they starting to see mood swings? Any of those two things, majority of the time, are going to be the problem. And then parents, especially parents, they have to stop enabling, because a lot of times they are enabling the behaviors, justifying it, being like, oh, they're tired. They're nodding out. Like, that is not tired. That is nodding out. And so a lot of times that's the reason what holds it up is because the family members in enabling behaviors or just plain out denial of them.
What is the difference between somebody who lives a full life after using drugs and somebody that dies from addiction? What is the common driving force that you see between those two people?
It's just like a house that gets hit by a hurricane and rebuild it, or you can go in the house, clean up the mess, flip the couches over, and go back to living your life. What I've noticed is the difference in the people who really do change is that they go in and they fix every aspect of their life, whether it's not just the drugs. They go into financial, they go into spiritual, they go into all of those different facets and figure out, was this going good? Because it might not have been good before they even started drugs. And so a lot of times they get back in school, they look at their education level, and if they do all of those things and really go into every aspect, normally those are the people that are successful.
David Brooks joining us. He is the owner of Brooks Behavioral Health Services. He has an incredible story. He has lived through a lot. In fact, I mean, listening to your story, David, it's like you've lived two lives in one. You've lived a life of complete hell, and then you've lived a life of serenity, of that of a servant who has helped people recover from a deadly disease. Do you ever feel like you've actually lived two lives in one?
Man, I'll put it to you like this. There's been times that I lived two or three lives at once. and the thing that makes me happy right now is that I only live one life. I don't lie to anybody about what I say. I don't lie to anybody about what I do. And I don't lie to anybody where I go. And that is the main focus of my recovery.
Do you judge how successful your business is by how many people recover? I know people judge the bottom lines and companies judge profit numbers all the time and profit margins. But what does a successful year for Brooks Behavioral Health Services look like?
That every person that walks out of my office leaves with a smile. That's the only thing I care about. I don't care about how many people walk in my office. I don't care about how many billing or claims that I have or how much money. If I can shake a parent's hand or if I can shake a client's hand and they smile at me when they walk out the door, that was a successful day.
Let's talk about the services you offer, because obviously it's not a, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, you are the expert, but it's not a one-size-fits-all approach that we're dealing with, right? We have to treat people differently, or do you treat them the same, or deal with them the same?
Every person that walks in my office is individual. I've had a history of doing mental health. I've had a history of doing substance, and I've had a history of doing criminal behavior. And that's all in my life. So when I have a program, I address everything. Like, I have people who, one client comes in and they have criminal problems. The next person that might come in might have an anxiety. The next person might be an alcoholic. So for me, I don't look at people in symptoms. I look at people in problems. And normally most programs, they're only symptomatically trying to change someone. So if somebody comes in for alcohol, that's the only thing they look at. For me, I don't really look at them in any of those three. I just look at them, what is your problem that I can help you with? And whatever that is, I either can do. Now, I used to do it pre-COVID. I used to do a lot of groups, but I just don't want to have a lot of groups around me. So normally I refer people out for groups, but if someone just wants to see me individually, that's what I do. I do assessments, and I do individual sessions right now. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. There's enough bigger programs. I'm that person that if somebody wants to come to my program, normally they haven't been successful any other place. And there's a lot of good programs that are around, and I refer this to them for things like IOP, intensive outpatient, and if they just need outpatient groups, I refer to really good programs, and then they might refer people to me just for individual services.
Marijuana has become a talking point for a lot of politicians. A lot of states feel they can get out of debt by selling marijuana. Colorado, Washington, here in Maryland, we're on the verge of legalizing marijuana, and it may be federally legalized in the next few years. Good or bad for our communities to have legalized marijuana, David?
Man, that one's a tricky one. What I would say is this, is that there are some people that have mental health issues that don't need to ever touch marijuana, whether it's legal or not. What I have seen in the past is that people with ADHD, ADD, marijuana is probably one of the best things for them. But I would tell anybody to go check with their doctor before taking that on. Mm. So I think pain, marijuana can be used, certain strands of marijuana can be used to treat pain. Cancer, all those kinds of illnesses. And so for me, it's the legal side of it. I just don't see people needing to be incarcerated for long periods of time for marijuana. And so if making it legal will tone that down, having people on probation ruining lives because of someone with a marijuana joint, I just don't see that being justified.
Should we legalize drugs as a whole?
I've done studies on like Canada and done studies on different countries that have. A lot of people are scared of just making it legal because of the temporary. Because if you do it in the temporary, you're going to see a whole lot of activity. But if you look at those countries that have made it legal, that eventually people just don't use it because it takes the stigma, it takes the that breaking the law mindset out of the drug, and so you see less use in the long run.
All right, David, we have to run real quick. A website for people interested in your services.
BrooksBHS.com, or they can go to CadillacCounselor.com. You can catch me on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, most every social media outlet. You type in Brooks Behavioral Health, Cadillac Counselor, you will definitely get to all of my websites.
All right, David, thank you so much for making time. An important message, an important servant in this community. David Brooks, the Cadillac counselor, joining us on the Four State Focus Show. David, have a great weekend. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
David, David Brooks joining us right here on WFMD and WFRE.
Four State Focus has been a public service of News Radio 930 WFMD.